Well, good morning.
Good morning.
It's definitely morning. It's really morning for me. I got up at 5 a.m. My time, which I guess we're in Pacific Coast, so we're both on the same time zone. It seems like, even though we're not that far away, it seems like we're worlds apart. You know, you kind of come over that little mountain ridge and it's like a whole new world opens up. And it's always great to have opportunity to come over here and to spend time with you all over here, and grateful for the opportunity to be here this morning. Even though I was up at 5 a.m., that means if I start nodding off in the middle of this presentation, you can throw stuff at me to wake me up, and that'd be all right. I've been asked to speak on making commitments, and so that's what we're going to do. That's what we're going to do this morning. We're going to talk about making commitments, and we're going to look at it, of course, from a biblical perspective, because that's what we do as Christians, right? We look at things from a biblical perspective, and we want to see what's the Bible say about certain things. So we're going to talk about commitments. Before we get into talking about commitments, though, I want us to realize that every aspect of life really does revolve around commitments. Everything that you do, even from the time you start making your own decisions onward, revolves around commitments. And so commitment isn't something that you can get away from. I've known people that have spent their whole life trying to not make commitments because they don't want to have to keep them. And we're going to notice as we look at this that commitments are making decisions about things and making a decision about something to the point where we're going to make sure that we follow through with that. And so we're going to talk about that this morning. We're going to talk about making commitments and talk about the importance of making commitments and talk about the importance of keeping the commitments that we make, because everything that we do in life really does revolve around making commitments. There were 56 men that signed the Declaration of Independence, and their conviction resulted in untold sufferings that would come upon not only themselves but also their families. Of those 56 men, 5 were captured by the British and tortured before they died. 12 had their homes ransacked and burned. 2 lost their sons in the Revolutionary Army. Another had 2 sons captured. 9 of the 56 fought and died from wounds or hardships from the war. Carter Braxton of Virginia, a wealthy planter and trader, saw his ship sunk by the British Navy. He sold his home and property to pay his debts, and he died in poverty. At the Battle of Yorktown, the British General Cornwallis had taken over Thomas Nelson's home for his headquarters, and Nelson quietly ordered General George Washington to open fire on his own home. The home was destroyed, and Nelson died bankrupt. John Hart was driven from his wife's bedside as she was dying, and their 13 children fled for their lives. His field and mill were destroyed. For over a year, he lived in a forest and caves, returning home only to find that his wife had died and his children had vanished. A few weeks later, he himself would die from exhaustion. One of my favorite books that I've ever read was the book 1776 by David McCullough. And so if you ever get a chance to read that book, I would encourage you to do so, because it's not fiction. It's talking about the real stories of real people that that formed our country and wrote the Declaration of Independence and all of those events that took place. And it's just replete with example after example of individuals that lost a whole lot. But they lost a whole lot because they were committed to something. They were committed to something bigger than themselves, so much so that they were willing to suffer these hardships. They were willing to lose these things because they were committed to something that they believed was bigger than themselves. There is nothing bigger in the world that we could be committed to than to Christ Himself. And so one of the central themes of Christianity that we want to look at that's often neglected is that of commitment. You know, discipleship, the whole idea of discipleship is becoming like our master, becoming like Jesus. And discipleship is a commitment. See, it's a process. It's a continual process. We don't just come up out of the waters of baptism and instantly look like Christ. We do from a spiritual perspective, because our slate is wiped clean. And when God looks at us, He sees us like Christ. But when you look at our lives and the things we do in our lives from that point forward, we're not perfect from then on, are we? But rather, we're constantly adjusting and constantly bringing our life into conformity with Jesus. And that's a process. And we've got to be committed to that process, because it's not always an easy thing to do that. When we look at biblical language like follow me, the whole idea of following is a commitment. Man, sometimes when you're following people, you ever followed somebody? I've done this before. You're following somebody and they're driving. You don't know where you're going, and it just seems like they're driving in circles and they have no idea where they're going. And you just got to totally trust and be committed that they really know where they're going, and you just keep following them. Occasionally, I've made the mistake of just breaking off from that person, and I ended up finding myself in an even worse situation. But following is all about being committed. Wherever Jesus goes, we're going to go. And then one of the words that's often used in the Bible that deals with commitment that I don't think we really think of as commitment a lot, but really is about commitment, is the word love. The biblical word for love is a word all about commitment. And so I want us to take a look at John chapter 21 and look at a few things from John chapter 21, because John chapter 21 really is a chapter about commitment. Now, the Gospel of John is written for a specific purpose. And we don't have to guess, well, why did John write the Gospel of John? What was his point? What was he trying to communicate? Because John told us why he wrote it. In John chapter 20, verse 30 and 31, he says, "Therefore many other signs Jesus also performed in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these have been written so that," okay, so why did you write this, John? "So that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name." The purpose of the Gospel of John is that it was written so that we would believe that Jesus was the Christ and we could have life. We could have that eternal life. Now, this whole concept of believing is a very deep and very involved concept. And you've got to study the Gospel of John all the way from chapter 1 all the way through chapter 21 to really fully grasp the depths of the word believe. Because it's not just about I mentally accept something, but it goes from the very beginning of the Gospel of John, where you've got individuals that Jesus says come and see to, that start following Jesus, all the way up here to chapter 21. Now, chapter 21 is the commitment chapter. Okay, so do you believe Jesus? John's saying, do you believe Jesus? Do you believe these signs? Are you willing to accept Jesus? Do you really love Jesus? Well, chapter 21 is the commitment part. Okay, so are you going to make the commitment? John chapter 21 and verse 1, "After these things, Jesus manifested himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias, and he manifested himself in this way. Simon Peter and Thomas called Didymus, and Nathanael and of Cana in Galilee, and the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples were together. And Simon Peter said to him, 'I am going fishing.' And they said to him, 'We will also come with you.' And they went out and got into the boat that night, and they caught nothing." Now, what's going on in John chapter 21? Well, Jesus had come. He called his disciples. They had followed him in his ministry 3 years. You remember where most of his disciples came from? At least four of them that we know of. Peter, Andrew, James, and John. They were fishermen, right? And Jesus came along the sea and he called them out of fishing, and he called them to be fishers of men. And so here's Jesus' disciples. He's been grooming them. He's been molding them for 3 years now. And in John chapter 15, around verse 6, Jesus says that true discipleship, that they were called to bear fruit and so prove to be his disciples. That's what discipleship was all about. It was about bearing fruit and proving that they were his disciples. So Jesus had called these disciples. He groomed them for 3 years. And now you get to chapter 13, the end of chapter 13, Jesus says, "You know what? I've got to go. I got to go back to my Father." And the end of chapter 13, you remember what Peter says? He says, "Oh no, Jesus, wherever you go, I'm going to go with you. I'm willing to die for you, Jesus." And that was the commitment that Peter made, wasn't it? Well, John 13 rolls around, John 14 rolls around, John 15 rolls around. Well, something happens to Jesus. Jesus has to go to the cross. But does Peter go with Jesus to the cross? What happens when they come to arrest Jesus in the garden? Where does Peter go? Peter takes off and he flees, right? Where's Peter at? Well, Peter's outside. He's warming himself by the fire. Are you one of those disciples of Jesus? Oh no, there's no way I'm one of those. Three times Peter would deny Jesus. Jesus then goes to the cross. Jesus is buried. He's placed in the grave. And then Jesus is resurrected from the grave. And when they get news that Jesus is resurrected from the grave, the disciple whom Jesus loved, which is John, the author of the book, and Peter, they start running. Remember, they start running to the tomb. And the disciple whom Jesus loved, John, actually gets there and before Peter. And it's kind of one of those humorous things, I think, the Gospel of John. John's writing this. He's saying, you know, I got there before Peter did. And I find a little bit of humor in that. But you see this Peter who's kind of at the distance, and he's kind of waffling. But it's not just Peter, really. You see the rest of the disciples too. You see them off at the distance. They've all kind of scattered. Jesus has now appeared to them twice. The first time he appeared to all the disciples except for one guy. You remember who was missing? Yeah, Thomas, right? We call him Doubting Thomas because he said, "Unless I see myself, unless I touch his side myself, I'm not going to believe." And so Jesus appeared a second time, and he said to Thomas in chapter 20, verse 27, he said to him, "Reach here with your finger and see my hands. Reach here with your hand and put it into my side, and do not be unbelieving but believing." And Thomas answered and said to him, "My Lord and my God." That was the second time that Jesus had appeared to his disciples. disciples after his resurrection. So you would think they'd get the point, right? That Jesus had died, that he'd been resurrected. It's time to get to work. It's time to go out there and bear fruit and prove to be my disciples. But what was the decision that the disciples made, specifically Peter, and then the rest of the disciples followed along? What was the decision that Peter made? Well, it's found there in verse 3. He said, "I am going fishing." Now I want you to think about this for just a minute. 3 years ago, Jesus pulls Peter and Andrew and James and John away from fishing. And he says, "You know what? You need to leave that old life behind, and I'm going to make you fishers of men." And so now, when they don't know what to do, and when it appears that their cause is lost, and they don't know what to do, what's the decision that Peter makes? He makes the decision to go back into his old way of life, to go back to those things that he was comfortable with, to go back to those things that he knew before he knew Jesus. You see, Peter really is waffling in the commitment that he made to Jesus. He's waffling in that commitment to Jesus that he's going to follow him wherever he goes. Well, you remember what happens, right? They go out fishing, they catch nothing. Jesus is standing on the beach and he said to them, "Children, you do not have any fish, do you?" They said no. Verse 6, he said to them, "Cast the net on the right side of the boat and you'll find a catch." So they cast and they were not able to haul it in because of the great number of fish. Therefore, the disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." So when Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put his outer garment on, for he was stripped for work, and he threw himself into the sea. But the other disciples came in a little boat, for they were not far from land, but 100 yards away, dragging the net full of fish. So when they got out on the land, they saw the charcoal fire already laid and the fish placed on it and bread. And Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish which you have now caught." And Simon Peter went up and drew the net to land full of large fish, 153. And although there were so many, the net was not torn. And Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." None of the disciples ventured to question him, "Who are you?" knowing that it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them, and the fish likewise. This is now the third time that Jesus was manifested to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. Three times now, Jesus has appeared to his disciples. And he wants them to get to work. He wants them to start bearing fruit and proving to be his disciples. So now notice where the discussion changes. So verse 15 now, it really all starts to focus in on Peter. And specifically, it starts to focus in on the commitment of Peter. In verse 15, so when they'd finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" Now that word love, remember I told you that word love is that word, that idea of commitment. I want to show you how in this particular section, how this all revolves around commitment. Do you love me? This is that word in the original language. We know the New Testament was written in Greek. This is the word love, and there's various Greek words that are translated love. This particular word here is the strongest, deepest, committed type of love that there possibly is. He says, "Do you love me?" In other words, Simon Peter, are you committed to me? Am I your number one priority? Are you going to follow me? Are you going to follow through with me regardless of the cost, regardless of what happens? Are you really, truly committed to me? Do you love me? But notice what he says. Do you love me more than these? Do you love me more than... What is he talking about? Do you love me more than these? Well, what he's talking about is the fish. See, here's all these fish. What did Peter knew? Well, Peter knew fishing. He knew fish really well. He'd probably grown up in a boat. He'd probably grown up throwing nets into the water. If there's one thing that Peter knew, it was how to fish. It's what he'd spent his whole life doing up until the time that Jesus had called him aside. And so now Jesus is going to ask Peter a very serious question. Peter, are you more committed to me than you are to these fish? And notice what Peter said. He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And he said to him, "Tend my lambs." Now here's one of the unfortunate consequences of us not having languages that completely translate one to the other. Some of you may have a footnote here, but the second love that's mentioned in verse 15, the one that Simon Peter says to him, is not the same word that Jesus uses. See, the first word that Jesus uses is that deep, committed type of love. That second word that's used is the word that Peter uses, which is more of like a friendship type love. In fact, the noun form of this word is used by John later when he says, "Greater love," there's the word that Jesus used, "greater love has no man than this, than to lay down his life for his friend." See, that word translated friend, that's the word that's used here. So what's going on? Well, Jesus is saying, "Simon Peter, are you totally 100% committed to me? way more than you're committed to this fishing and this old way of life. And Peter says to him, Jesus, you know that I'm your friend. Now, do you notice something here? Are you picking up on this? Peter is not committing to Jesus. See, Jesus is saying, are you completely committed to me so much so that you're willing to completely turn your back, completely turn your life away from this fishing and be my disciple, to be my fisherman? And Peter says, Jesus, you know that I'm your friend. You know that I'm your friend. Now, I want you to notice this happens a second time. He said to him again a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He said to him, Lord, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he said to him, shepherd my sheep. Same thing happens. Peter, are you really committed to me? Peter says, yes, Jesus, you know that I'm your friend. Now notice the third occasion. He said to him a third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Now this time, Jesus used Peter's word. In other words, Jesus says, Simon, Peter, are you really my friend? And Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. And Jesus answered him, tend my sheep. Now, see, what's happening here in verse 17 is Peter's recognizing that Jesus is seeing right through Peter's lack of commitment. Peter's not fully committing to Jesus to the extent that Jesus is asking him to. Jesus is saying to Peter, Peter, I want your total commitment. And Peter's saying, Jesus, I'm going to be your friend. See, sometimes we want a level of Christianity that's at this friendship level that Peter's at, right? In other words, when everything's going according to the plan that we like, see, when things were going according to Peter's plan, where was Peter? He's right there with Jesus. He's whipping out a sword. He's cutting off Malchus's ear, right? He's right there with Jesus when things are going according to his plan. But when things aren't going according to Peter's plan, where's Peter at? Oh, I'm not so sure about this. See, Peter's only committed to the point where he's willing to take a stand when things are going the way that he wants them to go. But you see, that's not what commitment is all about. Biblical commitment is about being committed all the way through, even when things get rough. Now, Jesus is going to push this even further. See, Peter sees this because Peter's grieved when Jesus asked him the third time, do you like me like a friend? Peter's grieved because he knows Jesus is seeing through this lack of commitment. Now, look at verse 18. Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were younger and you used to gird yourselves and walk wherever you wished, but when you grow old, you'll stretch out your hands and someone else will gird you and bring you where you do not want to go. Now this he said, signifying by what kind of death that he would glorify God. And when he had spoken this to him, he said to him, follow me. All right, what's Jesus doing? Jesus is saying to Peter, okay, Peter, I'm gonna up this just a little bit more. In case you're missing what I'm saying, Peter, if you're really going to be my committed disciple, you're going to have to die a death that you don't want to die. In other words, Peter, things aren't going to always be easy. Peter, things are going to be really difficult. Are you committed to me to the point where you're going to have to die a death that you don't want to die? You see, he's really getting the wheels spinning in Peter's head. He's trying to get Peter to commit to the point where he's even willing to give his own life. And then there's our word. Remember we mentioned this earlier? Follow me. See, love, discipleship, following Jesus, this is all about commitment. This is about following Jesus wherever Jesus goes. Now, here's a very important part about commitment that we all need to realize, especially as youth. It's very difficult for us to grasp this sometimes because as youth, we really do sometimes, we don't feel like we have an anchor. So we just kind of go, we kind of go with the crowd and we go with our friends and we go in the direction that our friends go. But you need to realize that commitment doesn't depend on what others do. Commitment is about what you do with Christ. Now look at verse 20. Peter, turning around, saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them, and one who had also leaned back on his bosom at the supper and said, Lord, who is the one who betrays you? So Peter, seeing him, said to Jesus, Lord, and what about this man? All right, do you catch what Peter's doing here? So Peter's going along, he's walking with Jesus. Jesus says, okay, Peter, if you're going to be committed to me, you're going to have to lose your life in a way that you don't want to lose your life. You're going to have to die a death that you don't want to die. And so Peter's not really liking what he's hearing, right? And you can kind of see Peter getting a little bit uncomfortable. And so he starts, you ever get uncomfortable? So you start to look around the room, start to look. So Peter's really uncomfortable right now. And he starts to look around and looking over his shoulder, he sees John. And here's John following behind them. And Peter starts thinking to himself, okay, so Jesus is telling me, he's telling me I've got to tend his lambs. He's telling me I got to shepherd his sheep. He's telling me I got to die a death that I don't want to die. And so he thinks, well, what about this guy? Jesus, what about John? What are you going to require of John? What's John going to do? And what are you going to make John do? Now notice what Jesus says. Jesus said to him, verse 21, if I want him to remain until I come, what is that to you? You follow me. You see, Jesus is making a very important point here that we need to get, and it's this. commitment does not depend, your personal commitment to Jesus doesn't depend on others. It doesn't depend on what's required of others. It doesn't depend on what others do. But commitment is about following through and following Jesus regardless of what anybody else does. Paul put it this way in Romans chapter 3 and verse 4. He said, "Let God be true and every man be found a liar." In other words, even if every single person on the face of the earth was wrong except for one person, God's still always true. And His truth is always true. And so you can't use others as the standard of what commitment is all about. Commitment is about following through with Jesus regardless of the cost. Now let's look at the way that this affects our life. One of the passages that's really important is found in the book of James. And so if you'll turn over there to James chapter 5. In James chapter 5 and verse 12, there's a really important passage that deals with this idea of commitment. Because see, commitment stretches into every aspect of our life. Not only does it deal with our relationship with Jesus and our relationship with God, but commitment has to do with our relationship with mankind and our relationship with one another. In John chapter 5 in verse 12, James says, "But above all, my brethren, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or with any other oath, but your yes is to be yes and your no is to be no, so that you may not fall under judgment." All right, James 5:12 is a really important passage. Now, a lot of times James chapter 5 and verse 12 is quoted when individuals are trying to talk about somebody. You shouldn't be cussing, you shouldn't be using bad language, James chapter 5 verse 12. Well, listen, you shouldn't be cussing and you shouldn't be using bad language, but listen closely. That's not what he's talking about in James chapter 5 and verse 12. In James chapter 5 and verse 12, he's saying, swearing is the idea of, when he says here, "Let your yes be yes or your no be no." Swearing is the idea of individuals would say, "Oh, I swear, I'm going to do it. I really swear I'm going to do it." In fact, the Pharisees and the Jews had come up with this whole system of swearing, like the level of importance of their commitment. If they swore by someone's head, it have this sort of level of commitment. If they swore by the temple, it would have this level of commitment. And then if they swore by heaven, it was really high level of commitment. In other words, if you swear by someone's head, you can get out of that for various things. If you swear by the temple, if you got a really good excuse, you can get out of that one. If you swear by heaven, you really can't get out of that one. But you see, they're making different levels of commitment. And so what the problem with that is Jesus, or James is saying here, and Jesus mimicked this same idea in the Sermon on the Mount, by the way, is let your yes be yes and your no be no. As Christians, we ought to be people, when we say we're going to do something, people, all those around us can count on us to make sure that it happens. When we say we're going to follow through with something, people around us make sure that that's going to happen. Because our yes is yes and our no is no. See, our yes doesn't mean yes as long as things are going the way that I want them to go, but yes means yes regardless of the circumstances. Now, here's a perfect case and example of where this was not taking place. If you back up in the book of James to chapter 5, verse 1, he says this, "Come now, you rich, weep and howl for your miseries which are coming upon you. Your riches have rotted and your garments have become moth-eaten. Your gold and your silver have rusted, and their rust will be a witness against you and will consume your flesh like fire. It is in the last days that you will have stored up your treasure." Okay, why are these rich people going to be consumed? Well, look at verse 4. "Behold, the pay of the laborers who mowed your fields and which has been withheld from you cries out against you. And the outcry of those who did the harvesting has reached the ears of the Lord of Sabbath." All right, what in the world is he talking about? What he's talking about is this. Some guy came along and offered somebody a job. I'll just say I offered John a job. I'm the rich guy. I come along and I offer John, "Do you want a job?" "Sure. I'll tell you what. You come out here, you work in my field, I'll pay you $10 an hour. So John comes out, works in my field, works 10 hours. I owe him $100, right? So he comes up, says, "I did my 10 hours in the field." "Okay, John, have a nice day." And I send him on his way and I didn't give him his $100. Now John's going to be a little upset, isn't he? Why is John going to be upset? Because I made a commitment to John, right? When I said, "I'm going to pay you $10 to work in my field for 10 hours, I made a commitment that I was going to pay him $100. So John goes and does the work, and then I don't pay him. How do you think John's going to feel about that? He's not going to be really happy, right? Well, turn that on its head. See, the book of James all revolves around James chapter 2 and verse 8, which says this. "If, however, you are fulfilling the royal law according to the scriptures." Okay, here's the royal law. Here's the king's law. Here's Jesus' law that governs everything that we do. "You shall love your neighbor as yourself. You are doing well." See, that idea of loving your neighbor as yourself totally filters into this idea of commitment. And here's why. If I was John and I went out and worked in John's field for 10 hours and he told me he was going to pay me $10, what would I expect of John? I would expect him to do what? to pay me $100, right? Because I did the work. He made a commitment to me. So think about this. What he's saying is, when you think about this, loving others is, when you think about this from the perspective of doing, loving your neighbor as yourself, how would I want to be treated? If somebody made a commitment to me, how would I want to be treated? I'd want them to fulfill that commitment. And so therefore, when I make commitments to other people, guess what I do? I fulfill those commitments. See, sometimes I don't think we think about it that way. Sometimes we think about it from a perspective of, well, I've got a valid excuse. I've got a valid reason to not do whatever it is that I've committed to do. But what if you were in the other person's shoes? I had somebody one time, I was living in Idaho at the time, and I'd flown back here for the summer, 3-day weekend. I had 4-day weekend, actually had 4 days off. So I flew out here, and I had a friend out here. And I was living in Idaho at the time. I flew into Sacramento. He came up from Merced to pick me up, took me back down to Merced, and then he was supposed to take me back to the airport. But before I ever bought that plane ticket, I asked him. I said, that plane I got to leave from Merced at 5 a.m., which is really early in the morning. But I'm only going to do it if you can make sure that you can take me to the airport. He said, oh, yeah, no problem. I'll take you to the airport. So I got out here. He picked me up at the airport, had a great time. Well, 5 o'clock on Monday morning when I'm supposed to fly home, guess what? Standing out on the street corner with my bag, waiting for him to show up. Guess what? Never shows up. So I call his house. No one's answering the phone. I call his house again. No one's answering the phone. I call his house again. His brother says, oh, yeah, he's going to come pick you up. I was like, okay, well, tell him to hurry. I got a plane to catch. I hang up the phone. I go stand outside. Wait. 35 minutes later, guess what? Guess who never shows up? He never showed up. In fact, I had to wait, and my uncle came outside, and he said, you know what? He's not coming. Get in the car. Let's go. We got in the car, took off, ran down there, missed my flight, had to sit there for a while. Totally upset. Justifiably so, right? Because if he was in my shoes and he was trying to go somewhere important, what would he expect? If somebody had committed to him that he was going to do something, what would he expect? He'd expect them to do it. But he didn't follow through on his commitment, did he? Needless to say, our friendship hasn't been so great ever since then, right? What happens in our friendships? Our friendships don't go very far, and our relationships are severed, and there's all kinds of hardships that come into our relationships when we don't keep our commitments. I think that's so important for you to really think about, because I don't think that we really understand it so much until we start to get a little bit older in life, until we start to experience things a little bit more, like how much commitments really matter, because it affects everything that we do. The first time you get a job, you go up, man, I'm going to work hard. You work hard and you're out there work. Just think, if that guy didn't give you the paycheck that he said that he was going to give you, you'd be really upset about that, wouldn't you? Now put yourself in the same situation. When you make a commitment to your friends, how are they going to feel if you don't live up to that commitment? The same way that you would feel if you had worked 20 hours at your job and then your boss says, you know what, I'm just not going to give you your paycheck. Commitments are important. Now, commitments are important in our relationships with one another. Commitments are even more important, or the most important, the reasons why they're so important in our relationships with one another is because of our Christianity. Because Christianity really is all about commitment. When we become a Christian, we make what's called the good confession. Romans chapter 10 and verse 9 talks about that. Romans chapter 10 and verse 9 talks about declaring that Jesus is Lord. Think about that. When we make the great confession, we're saying that Jesus is Lord, that He's in charge. In 1 Timothy 6, verse 12 and 13, talks about the good confession that Jesus made before Pontius Pilate. You remember what the good confession was before Pontius Pilate? Are you the king? And what did Jesus say? It is as you said. So what's the good confession? Well, the good confession is Jesus is Lord, that He's the King, that He's in charge. In other words, when we become a New Testament Christian and we make the good confession, we're declaring that Jesus is Lord, that He's King. In other words, we're making a pledge and we're saying that Jesus, from this day forward, I'm going to be your committed disciple and I'm going to do things your way and I'm not going to do things my way. You're making a pledge that you're not in control, but it's now Jesus's way. See, that's what believing, see this idea, remember we talked about this in the Gospel of John, believing involves this aspect of following Jesus, of being committed to following Jesus through all of these various situations that come our way. And that's why commitment is such an important aspect of Christianity, because it affects everything that we do in our life. when we talk about when we get older and we get married, we talk about making a commitment. And guess what? The illustration is used in the Bible of our relationship with Jesus, and the marriage relationship is something that's used of that. In Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25 and 27, the marriage relationship is used as an illustration of the relationship that we have with Christ. When we go down in the water of baptism and we come up, we've now been clothed with Christ and we've made a commitment to Christ, and we're now in a covenant relationship with Christ. It's this covenant relationship that the people of old didn't keep. You remember in Jeremiah chapter 31, verses 31 through 34, God had made a covenant with the children of Israel, and they agreed to the covenant. He said, if you will follow me and be my followers, I will bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. And they accepted this covenant relationship. But Jeremiah points out that they broke that covenant. You see, they didn't keep their commitment. And as a result, all kinds of hardships and all kinds of problems would come their way because they didn't keep that covenant relationship. They didn't maintain those commitments that they had made to God. Commitments are extremely, extremely important. So, I want you to think about, when you think about how important commitments are, you really need to think about your commitments before you make them. You really need to think about your commitments before you make them. Sometimes we just don't think about things, and people ask us things and ask us to do things, and we just make those commitments, but we don't really think about them. Luke chapter 14 is extremely important because Luke chapter 14 tells us about really counting the cost before we make a commitment. And Luke chapter 14 and verse 25, now large crowds were going along with him, and he turned and said to them, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and his wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Whoever does not carry his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which one of you, when he wants to build a tower, does not first sit down and calculate the cost to see if he has enough to complete it? Otherwise, when he's laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, all who observe it will begin to ridicule him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king, when he sets out to meet another king in battle, will not first sit down and consider whether he is strong enough with 10,000 men to encounter the one coming against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other is still far away, he sends a delegation and asks for terms of peace. So then, none of you can be my disciple who does not give up all of his possessions. What's Jesus saying? Jesus is saying, I want you to be my disciple. I want you to be my committed disciple, but you need to count the cost. And we really do. We've got to count the cost. Are we willing to carry our own cost? Are we willing to make the sacrifices necessary to build that tower? The time and the energy and the money. Are we really willing to go to war? Are we willing to fight that battle? Have we counted the cost? Before we make commitments, we've got to count the cost. Okay, so by way of reminder, number one, Christianity and everything that we do in life is about commitment. Discipleship, following Jesus, loving Jesus is all about commitment. You can't be a Christian without committing. You see, it's an impossibility. To say that I'm an uncommitted Christian is a total contradiction because Christianity in every way, shape, or form revolves around commitments. We need to be willing to make that commitment to Christ. But not only that, but commitments affect every aspect of our life and our relationships with one another. And everything that we do in life, when we interact with people, they all revolve around commitments. And we need to think about our commitments because when we make a commitment, we need to look at it from the perspective of how would I want the other person to treat me, and what would I want the other person to do if it was the other way around? When you make a commitment, you live up to that commitment because that's the way that you would want to be treated. And not only that, but commitments don't depend on other people. It doesn't matter what other people are doing. It doesn't matter what John, the Apostle John, was doing. It didn't matter what anybody else in the world is doing. Commitment is about you and your personal relationship with Jesus and following Jesus completely regardless of what anyone else is doing. And then finally, commitments are extremely important, so make sure that you count the cost. Know what you're getting into before you make a commitment. What is it that's going to be required? See, I may have hired, John, I'm going to hire you for 10 hours. Okay, I'll pay you $10. Okay, well then, okay, John, here's what I want you to do. I want you to carry a 1,000-pound wheelbarrow across my field 10 times back and forth for no reason whatsoever. He'd say, this is crazy, right? John, you committed to me. You said that you would do it. Know what you're getting into before you get into those commitments. Commitments are important, but be sure you know what you're getting into before you make a commitment. And the most important commitment that you'll ever make in your life is the commitment that you'll make to become a Christian. And so maybe there's some some of you out there that aren't Christians, and maybe you're considering that. Before you become a Christian, make sure that you've counted the cost. You've considered what discipleship with Jesus is all about. It'll be the best decision that you'll ever make in your life, but make sure that you're committed before you make that decision, because Christianity is all about commitment. I appreciate so much your time. I appreciate the opportunity to come and be with you. I've got to leave here shortly and head back because I've got a commitment at 2 o'clock back in the valley, and so I got to get out of here. But it's been great to be with you. Appreciate your kind attention, and hopefully this lesson has helped you in some way in your life. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Caleb, for that lesson. It was very good. We're going to have a break for about 10 minutes. You know, stretch your legs, feed your meter, make sure you don't get a ticket, please. We don't want that to happen. Then we'll meet back for a few songs and another lesson before having lunch. At this point, we're dismissed for about 10 minutes.